Welcome to the BFM Historical Society. This week, we talk to Hugh Sunday, a kid who started out at BFM at the tender age of 14. Hugh did all his growing up on air and didn't leave BFM until he was 26. He remembers some of those crazy days. Welcome to the BFM Historical Society, Hugh Sunday.
Thank you, David.
What's wrong with Monday?
When did you first become involved in BFM and how did that come about?
I was 14, so 1992. One Sunday night when I was actually helping out Bride of the Year competition, which was down at the Hyatt, down at the end, other end of the university. And we basically just had to walk all these brides, you know, around this, functions hall, and they showed off their dresses and all that kind of stuff. And I'd been a BFM fan, and it was a Sunday night that the event was on, and I think it must have been after 9 o'clock it finished or something. And I kind of put two and two together, and I thought, BFM's just down the road, and I love BFM, and Timothy Giles will be doing talkback, and why don't I just, you know, go on and knock on the door? So I did that. I said, hi, I'd really like to help out. And they said, sweet as, can you answer the phones? I was like, awesome. So I was looking at this mythical creature, Timothy Giles, you know, who everyone at school would talk about on his legendary Sunday night talkback. And I was just seeing him through the, you know, through the dirty BFM glass filled with stickers from past albums and that kind of stuff. And I started helping out answering the phones on talkback and, you know, writing line six, Derek wants to talk about legalization of marijuana, put it up on the window and he'd answer the call. And I think it was probably, I did that on and off for, well, probably mostly on actually, for I think it was 3 months before I got the courage to come up during the day and meet the daytime people. I'd worked out that Graham Hill was the guy to come and talk to because he was the program director at the time. That's not who you see when you first come up to BFM. You see Ben Hill, who was in the list of, what's the word? Unapproachable BFM front staff. He comes pretty high to the top, or he did at the time anyway. And I mean, the joke about how BFM is just, you know, a bunch of wankers who won't talk to you when you come up, it was pretty much just because Ben was on the front desk, really. Graham Hill said, oh, what's your name? And I was like, Ian Hughes. And he said, Ian Hughes, I like Hugh. Can I call you Hugh? No, Mr. Hill, whatever you like. And so that's when that nickname came around. In those days, he was full of energy and, who are you? Even just talking to him was a performance. So I just said, is there anything I can do? I've been helping out and talk back. And he said, yeah, sweet as. And basically the number one volley job in those days was to log CDs and then put into the database. And I would just come up and do that, you know, anything at all. Just pretty much come in every day and do something until the end of the day and then go home 5 days a week unless I had something else on. In those days, it was a lot harder to get on air. There were actually sheets which Graham would print out, and it was like almost an application form, really. And you'd fill out questions like why you want to be on BFM and what sort of show you want to do. And, you know, you had to list like 20 tunes that you'd play. But there was a practical test as well. He gave me these forms and said, take these away, fill them out, and give me a demo tape. And there was some instructions for a demo. You actually had to go and make a demo tape and bring it back. So I went to school. And the music department had a I just used their gear and basically got, I think, half a dozen songs. And I made this demo tape and basically recorded, you know, 20 minutes of a show at school, you know, pretended to be on air and everything, and brought it into him and gave it to him. He didn't mention it for ages. And then finally I said, oh, did you ever? And he just sort of stopped and looked at me and said, it was the best demo tape anyone has ever given me. I mean, the thing is with Graham, you know, he just said things, so,
yeah.
You know, he may have just been, you know, drinking or whatever, but, you know, I felt pretty awesome. And, eventually, I actually think it was a Friday night. There was the old 10 to 2. It was a four-hour show between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m., which was essentially a run-of-station show, but was often vacant, so people would, you know, be needed to fill in. So I think that was my first show. I mean, the whole vetting process was brilliant in those days. I mean, as I said before, it was harder to get a show, and you had to work harder, and you had to prove that you're really into it. You know, and there's something to be said for that. You know, it's one thing to go up and say, yeah, I'd want to do a show on BFM, but, you know, to actually get a task that you've got, you know, homework essentially, you know, then only people that are, you know, really keen will probably come back and do that. So no, I always, in fact, in later years, I always thought that, you know, it should have been, we should have had a similar thing. So this is Garage Land with Pop Cigar. The reason I chose this song was because A couple of reasons, really. One was that it was of the time, really. In my sort of my first few years at BFM, GarageLand were just, I don't know, for the people around my age, it was kind of like GarageLand were the first band, you know, first non-mainstream or non-commercial, as we used to say in those days, band who really looked like they were going to be huge. I mean, JPSC and Straight Jacket Fits and all that had already broken up by that stage. And, you know, they were a current band who were playing, who you could go and see, who you could just get really, really excited about. And, of course, you know, Roy the Lawyer was involved with, you know, them in some way. And the second reason was because it's a good example of a song which was scratched and that would always start skipping and that no one ever thought to replace it. So I'm not sure if this is the same CD or not. But, yeah, that was a pretty cliche BFM kind of thing. So, yeah, GarageLand, Pop Cigar. We'll be right back.
Tell me about that song.
Tuesday was always production day in the BFM studio, and that was the one day where no ads were made. It was just put aside for any on-air station, you know, thing like a promo for a show or an ID or, you know, one of those awesome originator stings that went on for a minute and had awesome tunes in it. And it was always a real, you know, it was always like a real event. You know, Joel Tobeck and people would come up and hang out and voice these promos and would just come up with scenarios and stuff. And the Freak the Sheep promo was getting a bit tired. Freak the Sheep, the New Zealand music show. And that they came up with a scenario of this New Zealand band in a big American recording studio, you know, got all this gear, but they still sound completely shit.
New Zealand bands making it in those big American studios.
Okay, guys, that was really cool. We loved it in here, huh? Yeah. Yeah. Maybe just one more time from the top, this time, like, the kids want a big Aerosmith sound, you know? Like, they were in here last week, a big, big sound. So let's try it one more time from the top. Okay, 3, 2, 1, burn! Oh,
okay. 1, 2, 3...
What's wrong with Manly?
It became one of those promos which was quite popular, and I remember Marcus singing it on a breakfast bus, you know, at some point. Graham said, we've got to turn it into a song, you know. People want this, you know, we want to hear the full-length version kind of thing. I sat down on a pad of paper and wrote out some lyrics. We went into the studio and we just recorded it. We all thought it was hilarious. Well, I thought it was a bit silly, but generally we all thought it was pretty funny.
What's wrong with Manly? It's my home country, so much more grandy, just ask my auntie. I went there New Year's and drank a few beers. Weren't many girls there, that was really cool, yeah. Two sets of traffic lights, population 7,000. Approximately, just by a big river. It's got a big power station. Angus MacDonald's the mayor of the town. He's into coal mining.
So,
what's wrong with Huntley? It's my home country. It's got a statue of old Sir Matthew. Business is booming. Tourism's looming, the power station's fuming, trucks come through zooming.
So
what's wrong with Huntley? It's my home country. Huntley welcomes your industry. Why people aren't there, it's a mystery. Huntley, great during Christmas. Huntley, better for your business. Huntley, something you just can't miss. Huntley, it's never minus. Huntley, Huntley.
So
what's wrong with Huntley? It's my home country. Just go there, just go down State Highway 1, that's how you get there. Don't go through the 10, don't go through anywhere else. Huntley's the place you gotta go. Big sign outside, you can't miss it. Huntley, welcome to your industry. Be there. Huntley, yeah.
And I just remember waking up on the Monday morning. I woke up and then heard it. And it was the first time I'd heard it mixed and everything, and was just like so excited that, you know, we'd done this, you know, joke, and it was actually on air. And he calls me up later on that day and goes, you've got to come in. Christine McGavin at Virgin Records wants to sign you. Blah, 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 blah. So I was like, what? Yeah, so we had this, you know, ridiculous sort of 2-year Virgin Records contract for Hugh and the New Zealanders. And
of course, it's become part of folklore. Most people assume that you're from Huntley.
Yeah. No, I'm not from Huntley. I mean, I hadn't travelled much, but you've always been to Huntley, because even if you're just going to Hamilton, you know, you've certainly gone through Huntley. So yeah, it was just the first time that popped into my head. Really, I was quite excited that it got to number 17 on the single charts in the South Island Regional Breakdown. It got to number 17, which is I always thought was really weird, because, you know, in the overall chart, I think it got to like 36 or something for 1 week. But if you broke it down regionally, that was the South Island where it would have gone further up the list than the North Island, which I always felt quite, you know.
What's wrong with Huntley?
This is a tune that I always used to, it was one of those songs that you heard And not being around when it was actually out for the first time, I always wondered who it was. It was one of those songs that you would always hear a couple of times on New Zealand Music Week. I specifically remember the occasion which I was, some DJ was playing it, and I ran into the studio and go, "What is this song?" And he was like, "It's JPSE, Bleeding Star." I'm like, "Brilliant, thanks."
moving along now, Hugh. Yep. At the age of 17, which you did the breakfast show for 6 weeks, which would have been an awesome experience.
Oh, it was amazing. And I totally caught some flack, of course, because Graham is probably pretty much the best broadcaster in the world. And both him and Marcus, you know, were pinnacles, really. And to have a school kid come in would have been, God, I'd be pissed off. From that point on, up until for at least another 6 to 8 years, at a rough guess, I was privileged enough to have the most ridiculous luck. Just for some reason, as one thing was coming to an end, something else would come up. So as breakfast was coming to an end, Richard Driver and Karen Hay were looking to start a new music show called Music Nation, which they needed a host for, which I auditioned for. And they called me up and said, you know, it's Karen Hay. It's like, whoa, whoa. She called me up and said, oh, look, we're not going to make you the host, but we're going to make you a co-host. And we've decided that there's two people we really want. And there's you and there's this girl from Christchurch who, you know, she's actually a bit of a musician herself. She plays guitar and blah, 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 but she's really great as well. So, you know, we're gonna get her to do the main anchoring and we're going to get you to do the field stories kind of thing. And her name's Beck Runger. We did that show, which was, I think it went for 2 13-week runs, so about 6 months. And then as that was ending, Ben Hill was leaving as reception on BFM, so I did that for 2.5 years, and which is a great job to really get a full understanding of the station, you know, the ad schedules, the entertainment guide, the accommodation guide, everything really. So BFM had an image problem with, you know, you'd be at a party and people are like, oh, BFM, you're a wankers up there, you know. And I was conscious of the fact that people, when they come up, they deserve to get treated with a bit of respect. Every once in a while, there was someone who was livid about not getting on the accommodation guide because it was the only place in town where you could get a free ad. God bless them, the listenership, but God, there are some idiots. None of those jobs were shitty to me. Coming from school, which was just crap, to an environment where you're treated as, not as an equal, but as someone with potential. And, you know, I loved every job that I got. I used to bother Elmer in production about how to use Pro Tools, so I'd fill in for him. I used to really love making features and stuff for shows. And, you know, basically I just thought any skill that I can acquire while I'm here will be a good thing. And so, any opportunity, I wouldn't turn down. It was awesome. It was just an awesome time. One of the great things about Graham Hill was that not only was he a brilliant broadcaster in PD, but he was in a band as well. So he kind of brought a holistic experiential approach to his broadcasting. And and this is his band, the Abel Tasmans, with Shape of Dolls, which was a pretty big BFM hit at the time. And I always think of Graham whenever I hear Abel Tasmans' tune, which isn't nearly enough actually on BFM.
Oh,
dealing with the BFM staff, who were just shocking at general, just living really, just day-to-day life. Dealing with any machine or in any sort of thing that we had in place to kind of make the office run a bit smoother was always a nightmare. So as much as they were hard at the time, they shaped me those days. Yeah. Bob's constant put downs and, you know.
With many girls there, that was really cool, yeah.
This was just one of those songs that the first time I heard it was just amazing. I think annoyingly it was one of those songs that I heard halfway through the first time I heard it. Like I switched on to it or something and was always waiting to hear the beginning. And again, because Tragic Fits had broken up by the time I started really getting into music, it was always one of those sort of mythical songs. And then later in life, when I worked on Ice TV at TV3, our production manager Arwen was marrying David Wood from Tragic Fits, so I got to go to his wedding, and Shane was there, and I think David and Shane and Mark Peterson got together and did like an impromptu. I don't think they'd ever got together up until that point, and played three Stricter Fitz tunes at his wedding. And it was just like, oh my God, I'm in heaven. I think it must have been 2000 or something. And this is one of the tunes he played, and it sounded shocking at the wedding. But it was a brilliant song. So here's Stricter Fitz with Darling a Prayer.
Thank you.
I mean, in the early days, it wasn't that breakfast was a particular goal. I just wanted to be involved at the station. But after I'd had that sort of taste of doing it, and had sort of if Graham was away, and if Mikey wasn't available, then I'd fill in. So, you know, you do it, and you get, you know, excited by it, and you know, and it definitely became a goal at some point along the way, and certainly after Mikey took over, then I became the backup, the most regular backup anyway, because of course Mikey had done Wednesday and Friday drives before he went to breakfast, and I mean they were golden shows. He was amazing. His Wednesday drives were good, but his Friday drives were amazing. At Friday drinks out in the BFM office, we'd just sit around and on that tinny little tannoy mono speaker be listening on that, and we'd just, I mean it was appointment radio, you know, you'd be sitting there listening to what he said next, and was just totally an amazingly unpredictable and exciting host. And you know, then he went to breakfast, and so I got Fridays, and just sort of hoped that one day I could do breakfast, because at that point because I was the only person that was filling in for him when he was away, at some point I kind of thought, well, it's likely that if he goes that I'll have a better shot of getting it. But then it was a tumultuous time at the station, and there were program directors and station managers coming and going, who some of whom didn't have a clue as to what they were doing. I'm not saying that just because they didn't put me in automatically or anything, but it was, you know, any DJ will tell you that time was, you know, there were lots of arguments going on. DJ meetings were like UN meetings.
Fiery.
It was a nervous time, because I was excited about the idea of it happening. And Mikey had been there for, I think he'd been doing it 5 years or something. I think he'd been doing it 6 years, actually, which was quite long for a BFM breakfast host. I mean, it had been, I think, on average about 3 years or something, if that, before that. So I was definitely keen, but, you know, I was enjoying Drive at the same time. But I specifically remember we were making that Flying Nun documentary for the 21st birthday. We were shooting it down at York Street. The D4 were recording, and we had about 20 minutes to interview them between sessions or something. So we're out on the couch at York Street, and there was a pause and questioning, and someone said, "There's a phone call. It's Aaron at BFM." And it was like, it had been like weeks since Mike had announced he was leaving and everything. So I knew that this was the call. And so, "Will you do it?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Brilliant. Okay, I'll call you on Monday." So, and that was the length of the phone call. I just was just, you know, I mean, it was the realization of, at that point, you know, everything they wanted to do. So we were doing a breakfast bus, and we decided that we wanted to go to the shore. I think we'd worked out that we wanted to go ultimately to North Head or somewhere around there. So we thought, oh, we're going past Takapuna Grammar, so we should see if they've got any bands who could play. You know, we're always thinking of, you know, events that we could do on the breakfast bus, that so it wasn't just driving around kind of thing. And so I called the music department. They're like, "Yeah, we're actually on this Tuesday in a couple of weeks, we've got this thing where some bands are playing. And there's a band I think would be great." So like a music performance night. And the music teacher sort of said, "Come along and watch this band." So me and Alice went along, and they were terrible. We kind of looked at each other and, oh, okay, they weren't very good. So we'll just sort of, we'll steal out. But we couldn't, because parents of students were there. You know, we didn't want to look like shockers. So we stuck around, and the next band played, and we were just floored. It was just like, I think they played two or three songs, and we were just like, oh my god, this band's brilliant. And we were raving, and then on the breakfast bus, you know, the 50 drunken music industry hangers-on all agreed, and and it was a great thing. So this is the Chex with Tired From Sleeping, which was from an EP of four demos they did. I think captures what they're about better than any, you know, than either album really.
Oh, we know diamonds made money for the stars. Oh, but the way things are going must be working for Mars. Oh, but money drops and clocks spin past. And it makes us think we must land fast. Yeah. on a good finish line. We are tired from sleeping. We're tired from sleeping. Yeah. We are tired from sleeping. We're tired from sleeping.
And you did Breakfast for 2 years?
Yeah, about 2.5 years. Yeah. I have always thought that BFM, you kind of get in, you do your thing, and you get out. And it's like it was an ever-evolving sort of thing. You know, you'd be doing your thing, someone would be coming up behind you, ready to take over. And that was what was the strength of B. I mean, Mikey was fantastic when he came in, but I always thought that he stayed a little bit too long. I've heard quite a few of these historical societies, and many people have commented that they thought Marcus did Breakfast for a lot longer, that Graham did Breakfast for a lot longer, because that's their perception of it. But in the reality, it wasn't, you know, and that was always what I wanted to do. I didn't think it was going to be quite that short. I kind of thought maybe another year on top of that, maybe 3.5 years. And it's probably different for every generation, you know. I mean, anyone who, when you start listening to B at a certain point, you get involved at a certain point in your life, and your ethos about what it should be is slightly different to the people that got there, you know, 5 or 10 years before you, kind of thing. But I thought, for me, the station had started making kind of on-air and promotional decisions about things which was too far away from where I thought the station, well, where a lot of us actually thought the station should be going, and we just... Yeah, I got increasingly frustrated. Yeah, just a bit disillusioned, really.
Things had changed. BFM had changed. The reality of the commercial market had changed. Suddenly you had a whole lot of other radio stations like George FM and Bass FM and My FM, and all these other radio stations had sort of joined the market. And, you know, BFM had to play its game differently.
It's really similar to the intergenerational argument at the NME, you know. It's like, oh, you know, the NME's gone to pack, it was brilliant in my day, kind of thing. And it was only because it was relevant to the music that you listened to in your teenage years, kind of thing. And you had this, you know, and you hadn't experienced it in the generation before that, so you didn't, you know what I mean? So and so as it evolves, then you feel left out, kind of thing. And it's, you know, it's the same sort of thing. I mean, it wasn't a big deal, but I got just a little disillusioned and thought, I think the straw that broke the camel's back, there were a few promotions which I thought were just really crap, which I had to do as breakfast host, which I just thought sounded really lame and just really commercial. So there's one or two things happened, and I thought that I probably had probably a ropey start, and over the following 2 years, it got to a point where I thought I was doing probably as good a job as I was going to do. I think I was probably really happy with it for about a year, and at that point, it was, I thought, okay, this is, yeah, I think I've done it as pretty much as good as I'm going to do it, and I should move on. It would have been probably maybe another year on top of that, but you know, but there were these other things which were going on. I thought, oh, okay, well, I'll nip it in the bud here. So I resigned. I didn't have a job to go to, but I'd given 6 weeks' notice. One person who had been trying to get on Breakfast right from the day I started was Bill Ralston, because I think he'd just taken over as head of news and current affairs at TVNZ about the time I started Breakfast. It was quite controversial, his appointment, and you know everything he did was, you know, he was constantly in the paper about this decision or that one. So we'd been hounding him for an interview for ages, and then finally we sort of said, look, I'm leaving now. I've given notice. You know, we've been trying to interview you for 2 years. Would you please come in? And you know, it's, you know, my last chance to ask you for an interview, kind of thing. And so he finally said, yeah. And I think I'm pretty sure he came in on the last day, on the last show. He sat in there for about an hour. And at one point during a song or something, he sort of said, oh, so what are you doing after this anyway? And I said, oh, nothing really. I just, you know, I felt it was time to go. And he goes, oh, okay, well, I'll give my assistant a call today. You know, well, let's have lunch at Prego on Monday, you know, which is we did, and we, you know, we had one of those typical, you know, cliche boozy lunches, and he pretty much said, right, okay, well, let's get you on board. So I went and did entertainment reporting for the late news, and which went on to Close Up, and so for the next 2 years I was doing music stories and entertainment stories for the news and Close Up, and until such time as I thought that I needed to, you know, go overseas and have a break. Again, I just got this fear of starting to do a bad job and to go backwards, you know. So I got a British passport through my grandparents, so it seemed like a no-brainer to go and finally actually go and have a black overseas. And met my wonderful fiance and had a boy, and then we brought him home about a year ago. He's a little over 19 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome. I'm in a full-time job at the moment, but that's only till that's end of January, which is I'm doing maternity cover at TVNZ on 2020 as a reporter. So I'll just wait and see what happens then, really. It's obviously everything's a bit different now because I've got a son. I think in the ideal world, I would do some sort of regular broadcast, some sort of regular radio broadcasting weekly or something, sort of music show on a radio station. The problem is that there's no other radio stations I really want to be on. But you know, and do that and do some television things as they come up. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not trained in anything, so I just have to see what happens and work hard and try and make my own future now, really. I'm going to finish with a song.
What's wrong with Hartley? It's my home country. So much.
I'm going to finish with a song from the Pixies because it's the song that I finished Breakfast with. It's the last song I played, and I'm not quite sure why, but of all the Pixies songs, in fact, some Pixies songs I actually like more than this. But this was just the song which meant something to me and which I loved playing in certain times of my life. So, and I've got no idea what it's about. And the title has always escaped me. I've got no idea what it's about. But it's Pixies with Bird Dream of the Olympus Mons.
Sunshine in the rusty morning, once I had
You have been listening to the BFM Historical Society, a weekly documentary series made to commemorate BFM's 40th anniversary. The Historical Society is broadcast every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. and is available as a podcast from BFM's website later on in the week. The BFM Historical Society is recorded at BFM and produced by Dubhead.